We are in ancient Egypt, the city of Memphis, in a hall in the palace of the king. Ramphis, the high priest of Isis, is in consultation with Radames, the captain of the guard. Ramphis reveals that the Ethiopians are threatening Egypt once again. He's awaiting word from a messenger who will tell him more of what's going on. The priests have consulted Isis. The decision as to who's going to lead the army has been made. Ramphis knows who it's going to be, but before going to inform the king, he says pointedly to Radames, "He's nobly born, he's young, and valiant." To have this honor would be the greatest thing ever to happen to Radames. If he were chosen, he'd conquer and return crowned with a laurel wreath, and it would all be for Aida. "For you I battled, for you I conquered," he'd say to her. And now he has his love song. "Heavenly Aida, you are the ruler of my whole life. Home to your country I would return you, back to the sweet-scented land you love. Then with a garland I would adorn you, build you a throne near the sun." Radames is, of course, a warrior, but he's also a lover, and this is probably the most beautiful love song for tenor that Verdi ever composed. It's challenging to sing those sequences of rising phrases, beginning with the very first utterance of the words Celeste Aida, Heavenly Aida. How to make those phrases end as gently as possible to match the quiet, airy accompaniment. And at the same time, the character's machismo has to emerge as well, with the brazen confidence of the born warrior. Amneris appears. She's the pharaoh's daughter. She notices that Radames seems somehow ecstatic. She knows very well that the woman who would stand by his side would be lucky indeed. He makes the excuse that he's dreaming of the glory that might be his if he's chosen to command the army. Now Amneris attempts to work her wiles. Isn't there something else in Memphis that he longs for? Now he wonders if she's discovered his real feelings. And she says to herself that she'd die if she had a rival for him. In this excerpt, you hear the motive that signifies Amneris, an agitated rhythmic pattern typical of her emotional nature. The rhythm is ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bottom, ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bottom. Now suddenly Aida appears. She's the daughter of Ethiopia's king, but having been captured, she's now Amneris' slave. Radames betrays his feelings instantly, just by gasping, "It's she." Amneris gets the picture, although she's not absolutely certain. Aida, is she my rival? Is he in love with her? In her words to Aida, we see her deviousness. "I'd never consider you a slave. You're more like a sister to me. Won't you tell your sister why you're crying?" Aida makes the excuse that she's frightened for her country. Here's the opera's first ensemble. Amneris and Radames' lines under Aida's, and Aida's soaring in her legato phrasing. We hear what this role of Aida really is about musically. Control of long, beautiful, flowing lines over a wide range, and always, of course, with the most beautiful, warm voice. The king, the priests, and army officers all now appear. The king announces that the messenger from the Ethiopian front has arrived. Here's his news. The Ethiopians have been plundering Egypt's fields, burned their harvests, and are now advancing on the city of Thebes. The messenger calls the Ethiopian king, Amonasro, an indomitable, ferocious warrior. The king initiates a call to arms, and he's seconded by Ramphis. It's interesting to hear the same sort of melodic line sung by two voices of the same category, back to back, so to speak. What's most important is sheer solidity of sound and assertiveness of manner. Let death and battle be our only war cry, everyone sings. Guerra, guerra, war, war. Those words signal a thrilling ensemble, including the first of several rises to high C that Aida must deal with in this opera. The ensemble concludes with Amneris' exhortation, Ritorna vincitor, return victorious, repeated by everyone else, Aida included. The stage empties quickly, with only Aida remaining. Her monologue begins with that cry, Ritorna vincitor. She can't believe she's spoken those words. Let me give you this whole sequence so you can get a sense of the scale of this music and the sense of Aida being completely exposed and alone when she repeats the words Ritorna vincitor. Note that Verdi sets them with no accompaniment until the last syllable. What does it mean that Radames returns victorious? It means capture and enslavement for Aida's people and her father. That's what tortures her. She finally falls to her knees and prays to the gods to pity her suffering. I want to play you two more sections of this aria. First, when Aida is at her most convulsed with horror over these conflicts in her mind. As a result, her line is tense, with sudden octave leaps indicating the extreme emotions that she's feeling at this moment. Now you'll hear the prayer, Numi Pietà, Gods have pity. This is Aida at her most heartfelt. The purity, warmth, and ease of her singing at this point can't be an end in themselves, however. She's still singing about her fatal love and her wish for death to end her suffering. We move to the sacred temple. This is a spectacular scene, but it begins quietly with a priestess of Ptah who's usually placed off stage. Almighty Ptah, the breathing spirit of life in us all, we here implore thee. This is a hypnotically beautiful refrain. Its sinuous line creates both mystery and serenity. A solitary soprano voice with simple harp accompaniment followed by the solemn intoning of the priests. After a ceremonial dance, Radames appears before Ramphis and the other priests. He's presented with a sword that has been consecrated. The dignity of Ramphis's lines here and Radames's response together create one of the most mesmerizing moments in the whole opera. When the priests join them, the buildup in intensity is thrilling, but it lasts barely more than a minute, just enough time for the gathering of these impressive forces to make the necessary impact on the listener.